Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Lee from FPL Family.
And I'm Ad from FPL Black Box.
Well, as game week 35 is in the books, and this game week felt to me very much like the calm after the storm. We had fewer chips being played by FPL managers this week, and just the standard 10 Premier League games. No blanks, no doubles, but still plenty of action to get stuck into. And we've only got three game weeks left to make an impact in your mini league. So if you're playing catch up, it's definitely time to start thinking differently. But before all of that, Az, how was this game week for you?
Rubbish. Rubbish, Lee.
No, can't have been that bad, Az. Come on.
It was. You mentioned, you know, fewer chips and, you know, the calm after the storm and all that. That's exactly what it was. Like, great week on the free hit. One of my best weeks of the season. Get my old team back. And they all let me down. And yeah, it was all about Mbeumo for me. I really wanted him.
Yeah.
Took a hit to bring him in. Unfortunately, the player I sold to bring him in was Eze.
Big point return,
and it could have been even more. So not my best move.
Yeah, you're actually, well, I don't want to rub it in too much more, but you got away with that one. Eze could have had way more than just the one goal, right?
Yeah, he could. He looked good. And, you know, it's always a risk when you take out someone like him. But, you know, you mentioned it earlier, taking a few risks. I didn't really know who to captain. I thought Mbeumo was probably the best captain this week. Four goals for Brentford. We'll talk about them a bit later on. Yeah. Also just the assist, slightly fortuitous assist for him.
Yes, it was, yeah.
As well. And yeah, that's the way the dice rolls sometimes. You know, a lucky penalty for Eze. If Mbeumo gets that penalty and gets a golden assist, then it would have been a good move. But as it stands, it was pretty poor.
It is what it is, as they say. What was your final point score then? And where are you in rank?
Well, final points was 40, but took a hit. Okay. So technically 46 is 1 point under the average, but then obviously I took the -4. So I'm sitting at 186K, which, okay. Yeah, it's not really where I want to be. I was pushing towards the top 100K, but now I'm back to where I was in game week 32. So it's been, you know, bit up, bit down, and now on the red arrow again. But come on, 3 weeks left. Turn it around.
Come on, let's be positive. And I think in game week 34, if we were sitting here this time last week on the back of the free hit and sitting here talking about how we got on then, oh, you would not be able to wipe the smile off my face. In fact, it was good that the producers of the show didn't have me on last week. I was way too happy and way too giddy because Liverpool had just become champions and I got 106 on the free hit. I had an amazing free hit.
God,
week.
Glad we weren't on. Glad I wasn't with you on that.
Oh, God, can you imagine me? I'd be unbearable. But I had a game week rank of about 2.5K and it was my best week of the season by a country mile. So like you with the free hit, you know, like, you know, you go into game week 35 and your team comes back and I kind of looked at it and went, oh yeah, I've got you guys back, haven't I? And I was kind of thinking, oh, I've got to make some changes here. And like you, I wanted Mbeumo in. I got a bit of Mbeumo fever. Four goals, only the assist. I think a bit unlucky, potentially. Yep. But the player I took out was Bukayo Saka. I thought Saka was going to get a full rest in between the Champions League games. And of course, then he starts. So seeing him on the team sheet, and not just that, but get quite a few minutes in that game, I was a bit, you know, I was shuffling uncomfortably in my seat when I saw Saka in the starting lineup.
See, I thought he'd start, which is why I kept him and which is why I took the hit around. I saw him in the starting lineup and I thought, this is it. It's, you know, lots of people are taking him out. Lots of people worried about his minutes.
Differential Saka time.
Differential Saka. Goes on the blanks.
Well, I'm not that much better than you. I'm 47 points without a hit. So I'm 47. They're not too bad. The star of the show was Kevin De Bruyne. We'll talk about him in just a second. I captained Salah. I don't know whether I got caught up in champions fever from last week or whatever, but it was his post-match press conference after Liverpool beat Spurs last week. He was talking about the individual kind of goal involvement on the Premier League. The individual personal records, wasn't it? There was a lot of talk about, oh, he could beat this record, but beat that record. And I thought, well, yes, I'm expecting Slot to rotate, but with Chelsea playing that game in between their Conference League games and with Salah so focused on those individual records, I just thought, yeah, okay, I'll back him to get a goal or two, but didn't work out. And actually Liverpool, and maybe we'll start there, maybe we'll go to Chelsea-Liverpool as a starting point. Yeah, big mass rotation from Arne Slot. Not really sure why, because we've not really got a lot to play for. I can only imagine that some of them were kind of celebrating long into the week. and I do want to give a shout out to Trent. We'll talk about Trent in just a second, because we are going to miss him, I think, in FPL. No doubt one of the standout premium defenders for the last however many seasons that he's played. But before we get on to Liverpool, let's talk about Chelsea. Cole Palmer, really the star of the show here. Or was he? Because, look, he had 5 shots. He created the most chances with 4. He had the second most penalty box touches with 8 of any Chelsea player. So yes, he was front and centre for everything, but he was up against a much rotated Liverpool side, particularly that 3 in midfield. It was Endo and Curtis Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott. So there was no McAllisters, no Sabolsos, no Gravenberch. So Palmer kind of had the, you know, he had them wrapped around his little finger, didn't he? And I think were it not for that last minute penalty, which is a little bit dubious, might I add, that last minute penalty on Moises Caicedo, maybe we're staring down the barrel of another Palmer blank. But as it is, he was man of the match, scored the penalty. And now there's a bit of a groundswell and a bit of a narrative about getting him in ahead of Chelsea's line. And what did you make of Palmer and what do you make of Chelsea?
Well, you know, you mentioned defences, but he's played against a lot of quite poor defences and not got returns lately. I mean, you go back right back to game week 27, you know, Southampton blank and then Leicester in 28 blank. He's played Spurs, he's played Brentford, he's played Ipswich. You know, none of these are particularly good defences and he's managed to blank against all of them. So, you know, at least he finally has found a way through. I think even in those early games, though, he was still looking good. The returns weren't coming, but he was looking.
Underlying stats were pretty good.
Stats were good, and I kept him through that. And it was when those stats started dropping off, and I was watching him, and I was thinking he's not really having the influence on games that, you know, we got used to from him over the last few years. But I thought against Liverpool, he was back to that. He was pulling all the strings. He mentioned it in the interview afterwards, making forward passes. Like he wasn't trying to play sideways. He was looking to get, you know, on the end of things and looking to make killer balls like through. And yeah, I was just really impressed. I thought he looked excellent. And I think the penalty is always, you know, luck, really, when a player that you own or don't own gets a penalty, he says, having sold his name this week. But it was deserved. I think, you know, you watch that game and you think it would have been a shame if he hadn't come away from that with something. And, you know, I think it's going to be good for him going forward. But you mentioned people buying. The fixtures are awful, like absolutely awful.
I'm not
like,
convinced. I'm glad you've said that. I thought we were going to come on here and you're going to say, yeah, I'm thinking about Palmer, but I'm not convinced, you know.
I just don't think there's enough potential there. I mean, he could tick over with a couple more goals, but in Newcastle, Man United and Forest, I can't see him getting hat-tricks in those games, braces. He's going to prove me wrong immediately, isn't he, when he comes in against Newcastle and gets a brace.
Big game that at St James's, by the way, isn't it? Big game, because it's hotting up at the top of the league for the Champions League spots.
Yeah, I mean, they're big games. I just don't think any of them... I mean, potentially, maybe that Man United game, but I don't think... Definitely the other two aren't. I don't see as being high-scoring games. I mean, the thing is with him, he only really needs a goal or an assist. He's probably getting bonus as well, and he's going to rack up the points. But I don't know. He's not for me. I've got other priorities.
Yeah, okay. And Chelsea as a team, then I guess it's the same answer, right? Because I noticed Enzo Fernandez in this game, 4 attacking returns in his last 6. Now he created 2 chances here. That's now, get this, is a good stat. It's 75 chances created in total throughout the season, which is the 4th best in the Premier League. So looking every bit the £100 million midfielder right now, Enzo Fernandez. I hate this word in FPL. Could you cover Palmer or cover Chelsea a little bit with Enzo Fernandez? What do you think?
I just don't know why you would. There's no reason to. You know, if they were playing like a bottom team, like a Leicester or a Southampton or something like that, then you know, I'd probably be saying get both of them, or you know, target them, because they are hitting a bit of form at the moment. But it doesn't really seem to be enough in it at the moment. I think if you've got them, you'd be tempted to keep, right? Enzo's starting to look quite good now. I know people have held him for long, you know, barren spells where he hasn't got anything, but I think you can probably keep him now. Jackson, if you bought him in after he got back from injured, you might want to keep him up front. Palmer as well. Maybe even the defence, because the defence has looked pretty strong over the last few weeks.
Kukurea's looked great, isn't he, last few weeks, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Kukurea, Cole, if you've got Sanchez and goal, all look fine. But yeah, I wouldn't be buying them at the moment.
All right, and let's talk about Liverpool then. So I, for one, I'm going to miss Trent Alexander-Arnold. Looks like he's off at the end of the season. As a Liverpool fan, going to miss him, but as an FPL manager, going to miss him as well, right? 9 seasons, 18 goals, 73 assists, 96 clean sheet points, 1,278 points later. Looking like he's going to be leaving Liverpool and leaving our FPL teams for at least the foreseeable future. Only defender to score 200 plus points in a season on more than one occasion as well, on 2 occasions. So, we're going to miss him, aren't we? Broke into the scene in 17-18 and he's been almost a mainstay in our FPL teams for the last few seasons. So we're going to miss him. Talk to me about Trent first and foremost, but then I want to quickly get on to Salah, because he is going to be a talking point, I think, this week as well.
Everyone's listening to this on podcast version, but I can see the tears welling up in your eyes.
Oh, yeah. You know the little emoji where you've got the smiley face, but the tears are still coming. That's
as you read
right
off
now.
The stats. Yeah. I mean, what a player he's been. And a lot's made of, you know, his defending, which I think is overblown at times. He's still a strong defender. He's maybe not quite got the defensive we're used to with some of the other like right backs in the league. He's no Wan-Bissaka when it comes to defending.
Oh, please. You know?
But, you know, I think, you know, it obviously more than makes up for that going forward. And I think it's a big loss for Liverpool because obviously he's been such a key player for you. I think it's a big loss for the league because he makes games more entertaining. He makes Liverpool a more entertaining team. And, you know, Salah is impacted when he's not around. And the team is because you're taking out, arguably the most creative player in your side. And it'd be interesting to know, you know, what you do with that spot, whether it goes to Bradley, who's a different type of player, makes great runs going forward, but hasn't really got that passing ability and range that Trent's got, or whether you go out and buy someone else. I don't think you will. I think Bradley is probably going to be, you know, the next big thing for us in FPL. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he develops over the you know, next few years. But yeah, big loss, you know, for the league. And yeah, we assume Real Madrid, don't we? I think he's going to go over there and do pretty well. So
I think so. I think he's going to go and join his mate Jude, isn't he? I think he is. But it'd be interesting to see how FPL priced the likes of Conor Bradley. You know, Conor Bradley's been a nice cheap option for us this season, hasn't he? I suspect not next season, particularly if Liverpool don't go out and buy another right back. And we do trust in Conor Bradley, as you say. Let's talk about Mo Salah in this game then. So like I say, most highly rotated Liverpool side, Arne Slot deciding to give a few of the fringe players a bit of a game. Got a header at the back post in the second half, which kind of whistled past the post. He put one on a plate for Nunes, who then got his header horribly wrong, I think. So on another day, maybe Salah gets some points, but, you know, wasn't exactly the kind of all singing, all dancing, double digit Mo Salah performance that we're used to so far this season. I'm just going to ask you this really boldly, Al, and just get it out there. Can you sell him? Can we sell Salah now ahead of Arsenal, Brighton and Crystal Palace at the end of the season? Two home games, including the Palace game where we'll lift the trophy. He's got some individual records to play for. I don't know, there's going to be some other big heavy hitters on the radar. Mm. Palmer, we've spoken about. Now, neither you or I, doesn't sound like we're mega convinced on Palmer, but there will be plenty of FPL managers that are looking at him. Haaland back on the bench for City. We'll do City in just a minute. But I have to say, for a very brief moment of weakness over the weekend, I think it was just after the Chelsea game, I thought, can I sell Salah to fund Haaland? And I'm just going to ask you that question. Sell Salah to fund Haaland. What do you think? Because Haaland's got a really nice fixture. City have got Southampton up next. And if he does get the start, I mean, what a nice differential, because no one's got him right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's three weeks left. You know, it's not like selling him earlier in the season when you're going to, you know, be clamoring to get him back and there's price rises and everything like that. You've got 3 weeks left. They're not amazing fixtures. I don't think. I know Brighton is probably...
I think they are good fixtures.
You think they're good? I mean, Arsenal at home. Arsenal, one of the best defences in the league. Yeah. Brighton, we turn up against teams like that, but I would still expect him to get something in that. Palace at home. Palace are a funny team. You never really know what you're going to get.
Very hit and miss Palace. Yeah.
I think the Brighton game is the exception because I don't see too many goals in the other two. I wouldn't be captaining him in those two games. Maybe against Brighton, he's the one, but... this is it. What can you do with the money? And you are looking at moving for a De Bruyne or looking for a Haaland potentially. You know, if you haven't got Mbeumo, you probably want him for the next two. You can upgrade, you know, a 5-5 forward to someone like Chris Wood, who's got two great fixtures coming up. I don't know, there's stuff you could do with the money, basically. And you're selling, you know, the highest owned player in the game and hoping that he blanks, you know, playing that variance game. If he blanks, that's blanks in pretty much everyone's side, where you can, you know, steal a march potentially on other people. So I don't hate it as a move. You've got to be brave, but you've got to use the money. That's the key thing. And I think with Haaland back, that presents the opportunity to do that. If you're just going to sell him, you know, like for like for someone, it's probably not worth it.
Yeah, and I said at the beginning of the podcast, didn't we? We talked about the fact that, you know, three weeks to go, maybe it is time to start thinking a bit differently in FPL. And City versus Wolves then at the weekend was very interesting for a number of reasons. Now, Pep decided not to go with Haaland, didn't he? Decided not to use him. He put him on the bench, didn't bring him on. I think the City faithful were looking forward to seeing their main man back. I thought that he might need a few minutes in his legs before the cup final, so I was expecting to see him, I have to say. But, you know, no Haaland for us this week. But Southampton, Bournemouth at home in 37, and then Fulham away in 38, those fixtures look incredible, don't they? And if we buy into that narrative of Haaland, as I said before, needing that momentum going into the cup final, I can see him getting some minutes again. I mean, what better game to bring him on and bring him in to get those minutes other than kind of Southampton away? But I'm interested in your thoughts, Az, on if he does come in, what does that mean for some of the other assets that we're looking at, right? So I bought KDB in a few weeks ago and he's been really good for me. And I largely did it a bit on the stats, but I largely did it on it's his swan song, it's his farewell. He penned a really nice letter that he put on social media to the fans. He came out in one of his post-match interviews and said, you know, I'm feeling really good. I'm playing pain-free.
So soppy.
I'm very sentimental this morning. All these big players leaving the league. Trent leaving, KDB leaving. I'm interested to see who the next kind of wave of heroes are. But KDB leaving the league. I buy into that. I buy into that narrative a little bit. Now, with Liverpool's fixtures and with the way Liverpool have defended a little bit this season, okay, maybe you can not go for Trent. But with KDB, I think you can. And I think with those fixtures, you absolutely can buy into KDB. But like I said, I'm interested in if Haaland comes back, what impact does that have on Haaland and on Marmoush as well? So seven returns this season for Marmoush, all at home. Two attempts here, but only an XG of 0.08. Zero chances created. I thought with De Bruyne in that kind of number nine, false nine spot at the weekend against Wolves, he kind of pushed Marmoush a little bit wider than Marmoush likes to be, I think. And he played a little bit kind of off the right. And we've seen Marmoush play there in previous games this season and be really ineffective off that right-hand side. So my question to you is, if Haaland does come back in, as we're expecting, for minutes ahead of the cup final, that sort of stuff, and we can talk about him being an FPL asset, what does that mean for KDB and Marmoush? Because for me, that would be, okay, maybe pushes Kevin De Bruyne back into that 10 and he becomes that creative fulcrum as we've seen before around Haaland. So again, does that push Marmoush wide right again? Do we see KDB and Marmoush maybe, you know, competing for the same spot? What about Foden? Does KDB go a little bit left like he has done a little bit over the course of the season? Haaland coming back, I think, puts a bit of a cat amongst the pigeons for us in FPL with our picks, with particularly Marmoush and KDB. What do you think?
Yeah, in some ways though, I think it makes them better. I haven't really liked this for Marmoush. I mean, obviously KDB's been outstanding, you know, and he's played way more minutes than I thought he would. You know, whatever role he plays in that team, I think it's been working well. I mean, arguably his goal threat is diminished a little bit because he'll be playing a little bit, you know, deeper on the pitch, you'd expect. But then I imagine his assist potential increases because he's going to be feeding balls to Haaland. They've had such a good understanding over the last few years. So, you know, I think that kind of mitigates it. I'm not too worried about that. Marmoush is an interesting one because when Haaland got injured, I think we all thought he was potentially going to be one of the top scoring players, you know, in his absence going forward. And it hasn't really happened. Away from home, it's been awful for Marmoush. You know, there's been no goals, right? No goals
nothing.
For Marmoush.
Yeah, nothing. No returns, no.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been home games. We've been dependent on points from him. I've actually enjoyed watching him more when Haaland's playing and he plays. He pushes, you know, Haaland drops deeper and it's like Harry Kane-esque and, you know, links up play.
It's
and
a kind of weapon in behind, isn't he?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, you know, he's playing a different role, you know, with him out, and, you know, City have been playing well. So I don't think Pep's going to be disappointed with his contribution. But in terms of FPL, I think it's been a little bit rubbish. So Haaland's going to come back. He's going to be the main man. I wanted to see
him?
Well, I wanted to see some minutes. This is the thing.
Me too. I did. Yeah. Absolutely.
I wanted to see 15-20 minutes, you know, and just to show that he's ready, because you're almost worried that he's put on the bench just to strike a bit of fear, you know, into the competition. Now it's like, oh, well, if you score Wolves, then look who we've got, you know, who can come on.
Yeah.
And it, you know, he wasn't needed, it didn't happen.
Southampton is he ready next though, as
I know.
He needs minutes, surely.
Like you said, he needs minutes because you'd expect him to start that cup final. So it's just whether he starts. If it's 30 minutes against Southampton, I'm not interested. But if it's a start against Southampton, I definitely am. So I probably won't be going there unless Pep, you know, by some miracle comes out and says, Erling's ready to start on, you know, and he will be starting.
And you think he'll say that?
Absolutely not.
No, absolutely not. And defensively, I thought City's goal led a bit of a charm life, actually. It's four clean sheets in their last six now for City. Vardy are mopping up the bonus points again. I think he got two in this game. But led a bit of a charm life. Ryan Aitnori a little bit unlucky with a one off the post. I think so on another day, you know, his owners could have had a bit of a haul. Defensively, though, still investable. And I think if you've got Vardy, or if you've got anybody else, then with those fixtures, you're holding, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they were a bit lucky. And then there's quite a few people in double defence who'll be wondering how they managed to come through that game. Makuno had a decent effort and there was, you know, some chance of other players. But they're just in that groove, aren't they, that we've seen them so many times in previous seasons. Obviously, they haven't wrapped up the league this time like they have, you know, previously. But it's in that groove where they're just playing, you know, game after game and just getting results and just churning them out, and Pep's got them back.
They know how to do it, don't they?
They know how to do it. This is it. And I think, you know, you're looking at those last few games and we should be looking at ways we can maximise, you know, City assets, because, you know, they've still got something to play for. They're going to be looking for, you know, second place and an FA Cup win. And, you know, Pep's saying it still wouldn't be a good season, but I think it's not. It's not a disaster that it could have been, you know, halfway through the season. And I think he'd absolutely take that. And he would have taken it at that point in the season too. So great team to invest in. It's knowing who to invest in. But yeah, defence, I think, looks fine. And yeah, obviously KDB too.
Very good. Very good. All right, let's move it on to Brentford versus Manchester United then. So you and I both bringing in Brian Mbeumo for different players this week. So lots of goals in this game. Four goals for Brentford, but nothing other than just an assist for Brian Mbeumo, which is a little bit disappointing, I have to say. They're the first team, by the way, to have three double-digit goal scorers this season. So Mbeumo's got 18, Vista's got 18 also, and Sharda now with 10. Only 5.1 million, Kevin Sharda, up to 14 attacking returns this season. Three goals in the past two game weeks, so a little bit of form as well. I've got my eye on, obviously, well, a lot of FPL managers will have their eyes on Mbeumo and Vissa. Obviously, they are the two to target, no doubt about it. But if you're looking for a bit of a budget midfielder, then Sharda at 5-1 with Ipswich, Fulham and Wolves up next. Am I clutching at straws a little bit here, or what do you think?
He's fallen under the radar, isn't he?
With
that many returns.
Absolutely. I
mean, for 5 million, we've all been looking at your Murphys, Rogers, Ilangas, you know, those kind of players. Yeah, I still think those three are good. But I mean, Murphy, for example, was never early sub for him in the game against Brighton.
Yeah, subbed on 55, wasn't he, Murphy?
Yeah, Gordon is lurking around. I wonder, you know, maybe move Barnes over to the right, or, you know, there's a little bit of worry, you know, with that. So, you know, maybe it's time to looking, you know, maybe it's time to sell him potentially. If you are looking to sell, you're not going to have a huge amount of money unless you are selling Salah, that we talked about earlier. But yeah, Charlotte's good. I don't mind that at all. I think Brentford are a good team to invest in. They've really got the bit between the teeth at the moment. They're pushing now for European places. I think everyone
all of a sudden they can get
They were sort of petering out, weren't they? Kind of around the table. But yeah, looking good. I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. I think, you know, a lot of us have got Mbeumo. A lot of us have got Vissa as well. You could even look to triple up.
Yeah, don't mind it. Don't mind it. The other player that stood out for me in this game in particular was Michael Kayode at the back, 4.5 million. He played at right back, but he was very attacking. He's really, really attacking. And I was watching the game, watching some of the highlights, and I just thought, oh, I've not really ever considered Michael Kayode in this team. And I thought, well, he's passing the eye test for me. He's getting into some of the right areas. Got an assist, didn't he, in this game against Manchester United. So I just had a look at some of the underlying stats, and he did 9 dribbles, got 5 take-ons. So I like the look of him. And he's also got another weapon in his arsenal, which for us in FPL, I doesn't matter too much, but he's got this kind of long throw that caused a lot of chaos in that Manchester United penalty area. I don't mind a long throw either. And to be fair, he is really, really good at them. So I then started looking at, well, you know, has he just come in this week? Well, no, that's three starts in a row. Brentford have won all of their last three when he started. His ownership has in FPL is 0%. I looked on the app. I'm sure someone's got him, but right now it doesn't even round up to 0.1%. He's 0% owned.
I saw that, yeah.
And they've got Ipswich up next. I'm just like, hold on a minute. Have I unearthed a bit of a gem here? What do you think of Michael Kayode? What do you think?
I guess the counter argument to that is
I'm trying to sell him to you.
I know you really are. You're really trying to drive this back. Well, I don't mind him as a pick. You know, like we said, the fixtures are good. The attacking potential's there. I think defense has been a bit of a problematic position all season anyway, because no one's really. You know, Munoz has arguably been the most exciting defender and the best defender to own like all year. There isn't really too many other standouts, but. Defensive transfers, 3 weeks to go. No, we're talking about chasing in mid-league. I mean, what's the best case scenario with Kayode? He gets an assist. I mean, Brentford have had a couple of clean sheets recently. They've looked a bit more solid, but I don't know. I think there's other moves I'd be looking to make. If you've still got your wild card, if you listen to this, you've still got your wild card or something like that, then I think he would be a really fun pick. If you've, you know, maybe you've got 3-4 transfers left, you know. So, you know, if you, in that situation, maybe, but if you're like me and you're, you know, every week you're trying to work out which is the best one player to bring in, or you're taking hits to bring out Eze.
Let's not talk about it again.
Let's not talk about it anymore. Then I think, you know, you might find more value elsewhere. But if we're just purely thinking about defenders, if you are definitely looking to make a defender move, you know, this week, then I like it because the games are good and he's got that attacking threat.
Well, as if you still had your bench boost chip. And you still had Gabriel. I'm asking for a friend here. You still had a bench boost chip. You still had Gabriel lurking in your 15. So therefore kind of had to make a defensive transfer. Would Gabriel to Kayode be something you might look to do? Asking for a friend.
Do you know what, Lee? I'm not going to try and, you know, I do this all the time. I come on here, you know, you say a player, I poo-poo it a little bit. You know, I don't want to do that to you this week. So I think it's a great move. Gabriel to Kayode. I would tell your
friends.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Do you know what? I'd love to go back through all of the Lee and Az off the bench podcasts and find out of all of the random shouts that I've had, how many of what's my hit rate? What's my success rate?
I'm guessing you were going on and on and on about the one we did.
Oh, it was Daniel Marlon, wasn't it? It was massive. Yeah, then he didn't start, and I think you texted me to say, well done, Lee. He's not started. He come on and scored.
Off the bench and scored. Yeah.
Off the bench and scored. I know. Yeah. There you go. On brand and everything. Very on apt. Brand. Right, let's go to Brighton versus Newcastle then. I must say, Newcastle, three penalties given, two that VAR overturned, only the third was upheld. We'll talk about Murphy and Barnes and that dynamic in a bit, but let me hand the podcast over to you then. As Brighton, a little bit hit and miss, to say the least recently, if you don't mind me saying.
Has it been hit recently? I mean, I guess you could class the West Ham win as a hit. I mean, it's one win in seven. One win in seven.
Okay. I hadn't realised that. Okay.
Yeah, it's not been a good. Well, since we got knocked out of the FA Cup by Forest, it's been really, really poor. And you know, we were chasing Champions League up until that point. And I think that was very unlikely, but you know, I thought maybe sixth or seventh was a possibility. We'd be lucky to get eight now. Don't think it's gonna happen. Injuries haven't helped. I mean, centre back, Belaba coming in at centre back just hasn't really worked. You know, we've had Van Hecker out for a bit. We've had other players coming in and out of the team. And
yeah, Matoma out as well now, Az?
Yeah, Matoma out, we think, till potentially to the end of the season too. So obviously having to reshuffle around that. I think we're a good team to target. And it's, you know, it's why we mentioned Salah. I think I'm maybe a little bit reluctant to sell him off the back of that because, yeah, we haven't looked amazing. We're sort of petering out between now and the end of the season. I just, you know, we were 1-0 up. Minte scored a great goal, but they were knocking at the door throughout, and
yes,
all these different penalties being overturned, and you sensed something was going to happen, and eventually it did with Isak getting the equaliser. So yeah, funny game. I wouldn't be buying Brighton players at the moment. Let's put it that way.
No, me neither. Particularly with those fixtures, Wolves and Spurs away, and then Liverpool at home in 37. It's looking tricky. Since I think we'll move on from Brighton, but Newcastle, we kind of touched on it earlier. Murphy, is subbed on 55, a little bit ineffective in this game. Is his away form a bit of a concern? We know that every time he steps onto the park at St James's, you know, he tends to get his points, but away, not quite so good. And with Harvey Barnes, three shots in this game, two chances created, so a nice performance from him. I don't think I'm going to be, you know, certainly going to be holding on to Isak, and I think even Livramento, I don't think I've got a luxury transfer that I'd want to move Livramento to. But yeah, Murphy just starting to be a little bit of a concern for us, particularly, like I say, with Barnes' form and with Anthony Gordon potentially coming back as well. What are your thoughts? I mean, you said, touched on it earlier. Jacob Murphy, is he a sell? And if he is, he's hard to go anywhere with him, right? Because he's not that expensive.
Yeah, I think he's a sell at this point. You know, right. Chelsea and Arsenal next. That's two tough games. And then Everton
as well. Difficult.
I know. I just don't see huge hauls in it for Newcastle in that period. And you've got someone who's highly rotated. And crucially, you've got a really, really highly owned player that you've got to imagine a lot of people are going to be reluctant to sell because he's done well in the past. You know, there's money tied up in him and all of that. So that presents an opportunity to move on from him. I really like the look of someone like Elanga, like for example. I know you mentioned there's not a huge amount of choice, and I do agree, but someone like Elanga is quite a bit cheaper. He's got two great fixtures, you know, coming up. He should have scored really yesterday. As well, surely straight at the keeper. So I think there are places you can move for around 5-5. We mentioned Sharda earlier too. There's better options than Murphy going forward. So I think he's very, very high on my list as a sell.
Yeah, could be. And I think given that we spoke about Sharda and you've gone Elanga, there are options, right? There are options. It's not a case of if you want to sell Murphy, there's nowhere to go. You've got to find the money and maybe take hits. There are places you can go, I think. I think there are places you can go. Let's move it on to Leicester versus Southampton. Now, not one that we should spend a lot of time talking about on the podcast. I noticed in the producer's notes for the podcast, he's put skip, ? Well, I think the Leicester and the Southampton fans deserve us talking about them. And you know what I'm like when I come on these off-the-bench podcasts? I like to come up with, you know, not just some random picks, but some out-there shouts, let's say. Let's briefly touch on Jamie Vardy. He's on 199 goals now for Leicester City. I'd like to build a bit of a narrative around him, as you know what I'm like with these kind of shouts. He plays Ipswich at home in game week 37, Forest away in 36. So if he doesn't score against Forest in 36, and then he's potentially captaining the Leicester side at home to Ipswich for his last game at the King Power for 200 goals. I mean, that's captaincy material, isn't it? Captain Vardy, game week 37, come on.
Listen to you, Captain and Jamie Vardy, bringing in players.
So sentimental
messages
today.
On, you know, email, you know, letters to the fans and all that. I mean, what could you say about, I mean, Jamie Vardy? I mean, what a player he's been. I mean, if he was playing for a swashbuckling Leicester team, I would be all over this, you know, as a final swan song. But unfortunately, you know, they're a poor team. They're one of the three worst teams in the league. They've beaten the worst team.
One of those other teams is Ipswich, and he's got
well,
in 37.
Yeah, well, true. And, you know, I guess we did want to see something against Southampton to show that he's got it. I mean, I was looking at a stat recently, which was he's had the most minutes of all forwards in the league this season.
Has he really? Wow.
Yeah, okay. which is crazy when you consider the amount of forwards. You know, like, if you told me that Vardy would have played more minutes than like the likes of Watkins and Mateta and, you know, these players, and obviously I know injuries been a part, but the fact he's stayed fit for the whole season, the fact he's been so entrusted to, you know, lead the line for them is fair play. So you get minutes out of him, so there's no worry there. I just wonder, you know, if maybe, you know, it would be a real shame though, wouldn't it, if he ended on 199.
Can you imagine? I just can't see it happening. I just think there'll be that Ipswich game in particular. He's going to be targeting that. I'm going to buy into that romantic narrative. I think if you want to make some real gains in the last few weeks, Vardy captain at home to Ipswich in game week 37, you can mark that one down on your bingo card. Let's move on, because those are two relegated teams. We're not going to be talking about them for much longer on this podcast. Let's talk about West Ham versus Spurs, then, another popular asset this week. A lot of FPL managers bringing in Brian Mbeumo, but a lot going to Jarrod Bowen as well.
Yeah.
And he was very, very good in this game. A lot of West Ham fans I speak to, not overly enamoured with their team right now, but they all say that, you know, Bowen is not just on form, but where would they be this season without him? He's directly contributed to 75% of West Ham's goals this season, by the way, since Potter arrived at least. So very, very much Potter's talisman in this side. 5 goals and 4 assists in 12 matches since returning from injury. That's an average of 6.2 points per start for Jarrod Bowen. And with Manchester United up next, who will have their eyes on Europe, and then Forest at home, Ipswich away on the final day. I mean, if you've got Bowen, you're absolutely keeping him. And there is a case of bringing him in, no?
Yeah, I was really considering him, you know, this week. I think he's a funny player, isn't he? Because West Ham have been really poor, and you watch them and, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get from them.
Yeah, very mixed performances. No winning eight for West Ham, right? So they've been
bad. And I'm, you know, as a Brighton fan, I have mixed feelings towards Graham Potter. But when he signed for West Ham, I thought, you know, my wishes were well. Let's put it that way. I'd like to see him, you know, do well and get back to where he was, you know, before he left us for Chelsea. But you're looking at a team who are just so, they just obviously haven't really bought into that style yet. You know, they're quite negative in the way they play. They've got one asset that you'd consider, but that asset is absolutely dominating. So
sometimes
in FPL, you kind of put aside, you know, the team performance, everything. You just like, okay, what have we got here? And you've got an out of position player, arguably playing in the form of his life, you know, and the whole team just built around getting him goals. So I think he's an absolutely brilliant asset, despite West Ham's struggles. Yeah, he's a good move. I think still, I would expect him to carry on doing well. I do think it's sort of the odd goal here and there, like 3 games left, you know, maybe he gets 2 goals, something like that. I can't see him getting braces, hat tricks, just because of the way West Ham are playing at the moment. So
if he gets the one goal though, Az, I mean, they're not, you know, they often concede as well, and they're not scoring a bunch of goals, and it'd be in and around
this,
the bonus,
this is it. Yeah. I mean, he's a player who, you know, I can imagine a couple of in and around like 8 to 10 points pointers down the end of the season, which is absolutely fine and great.
You
but
take that. Yeah.
Again, if you're looking for a player to bring in explosive returns, you know, Jamie Vardy gets Ipswich at home, captain, that kind of thing, you know, you might look elsewhere, but you know, there's nothing wrong with Bowen. I think he's a good pick. I probably won't be able to move for him, and every time it's one of those ones where every time you see a score, you know, flash up on one of your apps or something like that, and it's West Ham have scored, you know, it's
if he's not scored, you know, he's assisted, right?
That's
he's always going to be involved.
That's it.
Always. Not much to talk about on the Spurs front. I think obviously they've got their eyes on other things, haven't they? Despite two decent looking home games, Palace and Brighton both at home between now and the end of the season, but I don't think we're going there. I do want to give a shout out to Tell though. First or joint first among all his Spurs teammates for shots. He got 2 shots, 4 crosses, 4 dribbles, and 22 final third touches. Let's move to the other side of North London though. Arsenal versus Bournemouth. What do you make of this game then? So Bournemouth with a you know, it's a podcast, so I'm going to do the thing where I do the air quotes with my fingers. So this is not great on a podcast, but kind of a shock. Was it a shock result? I guess it was. But, you know, Arsenal, again, got bigger fish to fry, haven't they, out in Europe? So I wasn't massively shocked when Bournemouth come away with the win. The set piece goal, Evan Nielsen's goal, by the way, was, I thought, really well worked. I think Sky did a really great bit of analysis. Jamie Carragher did a bit of analysis after the game about how Bournemouth kind of pinned Arsenal in, and then I think it was David Brooks gets the header, and then Evan Nielsen bundles it in at the back post. So very much did a kind of, you know, did an Arsenal on Arsenal, if you know what I mean. Arsenal have been so good from set pieces, haven't they, so far this season. But in 7 of their last 10 Premier League matches, Arsenal have scored 0 or 1 goals. So they are a kind of season petering out a little bit for Arsenal, not really being that creative, even with Saka back in the team. So what do you make of this game?
I think given that the game was sandwiched in between the Champions League games, I wouldn't have been too surprised if Bournemouth had got a result in it. What I was surprised at was Arsenal's lineup. When I saw it was effectively a full strength lineup, then you think, okay, Bournemouth, you know, are going to probably struggle here to get a win. I mean, they've never won at the Emirates before, you know, in the Premier League. So, you know, for them to win against a strong Arsenal team, maybe that edge of them having the Champions League might be mitigated a little bit. But, you know, they scored, and it looked like it was going to be fairly routine. Like you said, like a lot of their games, there's not a lot of exciting play that we've seen in the Premier League recently. Yeah, not a lot of goals being scored, but generally speaking, they're quite solid and you think they're going to see it out. But similar to the Brentford game, it just started to get away from them a little bit, and you said the momentum was turning and it just needed something just to turn it. And that's what happened, you know, set piece goals, free kick goals. And after that first one went in, it felt like there was something that had changed. It looked like Arsenal were going to struggle to get the game. Absolutely. The momentum massively changed, yeah. So I wasn't surprised, and then I was, and then I wasn't again. So there you go. That's my analysis.
Yeah, well, Arsenal, they only had one shot between minutes 57 and 92. So that tells you everything. You know, for the last third of the game, really not a lot of goal mouth action for Arsenal. And Saka had 4 attempts, but they all arrived in 7 minutes. So almost kind of like, you know, he burst onto the scene, burst into action, and then didn't really, even in his mind, maybe he's thinking, I've got to preserve myself a little bit for what's coming during the week. But from Bournemouth's perspective, now scored in 15 of their 18 away fixtures this season, fourth in the away table. Only Liverpool have scored more on the road. If you look at their remaining fixtures, it's Villa and Leicester both at home. But then that fixture, what is that, away to Manchester City in 37. Now City are going to be absolutely bang up for that, no doubt about it. But on the road, Bournemouth are all right. So I wonder whether they're worthy of investment. Maybe Evan Nielsen or somebody at the back, maybe a Hoysen or a Kirkes. Are we moving on from Bournemouth, or are they catching your eye?
Potentially. I think, again, if you've got them, you keep them. Would I be buying Bournemouth for those fixtures?
Not a buy, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, Evan Nielsen is the one. I mean, he's just been so impressive, I think, since he's come into the league. They really missed him when he got injured. I mean, 15 returns in 25 starts for, you know, a player
very
who,
good, isn't it?
You know, has just come into the league. He's obviously a big boots to fill as well with Solanke leaving, and he's come in and done that, added real class and leads the line really well. So he's the one, I think, you know, if you're looking for a player, because I mean, Semenyo, for example, got benched. I wasn't expecting that with Dango coming in. So there's a bit of a risk of some of the others, but I think Evan Nielsen plays the next few. So he's the one that I'd consider. But again, with the fixtures the way they are, I'm probably looking elsewhere. But what a season they've
so
had.
Good. Yeah, so good. Dean Howson at the back, only 4.5 in FPL. I suspect he'll be more than that going into next season. Three goals for him now this season as well. So a threat from the set pieces as well. I think he's a top player, Dean Howson. Really like the look of him. Let's rattle through the rest of these games then. As so, Villa versus Fulham. 6 returns now in 8 for Youri Tielemans. Talking of players having a good season, he really is the orchestrator in chief, isn't he, for Aston Villa so far this season. 4 clean sheets in 7 league games now for Villa as well. That's more than they managed in the first 27 game weeks when they only got 3. So tightening up at the back, no doubt about it. A little bit wasteful in front of goal though. And Ollie Watkins in particular has missed 2/3 of his big chances this season. He did that in 2023-24 as well. He missed a lot of big chances last season. He's doing it again this year. No one in the league has missed more big chances than he has. 25. It's Salah on 21, Jackson on 21 after that. So Watkins, 25 big chances missed. Any thoughts to invest in Aston Villa or Fulham going into the final 3 game weeks?
Well, 6 wins in 7 now for Villa, which is, you know, madness, really. They were on a bit of a, not a bad run, but they were drawing a lot of games going into that. Yeah, and I think a lot of us thought Champions League was maybe going to elude them this season, but they've really, really picked it up. I mean, there is interest in them. It's just who to invest in. Watkins looks a great asset, but I do wonder if he's got fully the backing of Emery. And, you know, I think the game against Fulham doesn't really help. If he gets a goal or scores a couple of goals in that,
it changes
the... But he's going to be annoyed of him for the misses that he's had. There's not a lot of option to bring in for him, but, you know, subbed again, you know, when they just 1-0 up, just played 70 minutes. Rodgers is still the key man in midfield. I don't think I'll be looking elsewhere.
Got to be, isn't it?
And then, and then defence looks good. But like I said earlier, I'm not sure defensive transfers are going to be the ones I'm making. So you could take a punt on Asensio or someone like that. Maybe even Tielemans if he can carry on with the rate that he's going. But yeah, they're a team in great form with decent fixtures. But I think in terms of assets, I'm just a little bit cautious. It probably is Watkins, isn't it? I think you could take a punt. He's gonna play the next few, but. I won't be going there.
Yeah, I think they're a reluctant move on, aren't they? Especially with those fixtures, Bournemouth away, but then Spurs and Manchester United, who we've said it a few times, right? Got their eyes on other things, both of those sides, right? So we're going to move on from Villa, but it is reluctant. Where have we not been? Everton versus Ipswich, and then we've got the Monday night game just to finish up on.
So that's
Everton,
the one I put skip in.
Did you? What about Everton versus Ipswich?
I'm afraid so.
Well, go on. Why did you say skip to Everton versus Ipswich? Because I want to talk about Dwight McNeil. Go on.
Do you? Well, at least the Leicester game had the Jamie Vardy narrative that you spun so well. Everton,
no
Ipswich,
romantic narrative for Everton versus Ipswich, is it?
I'm afraid not. That is the game this week where I'm afraid I don't have a whole lot of excitement about. Everton defenders, I guess, look good. I would expect Everton to grind out a 1-0 win in that, but I wouldn't be looking at their attackers. I wouldn't be looking at McNeil, and I wouldn't be looking at Ipswich. So that's why I put skip.
Well, I'm not going to skip. I'm going to build, Everton fans, I'm going to build a romantic narrative for you. Last game at Goodison Park in game week 37, Southampton at home. Come on, you are on this
at the moment, aren't you?
I mean, Dwight McNeil, I was just having a look at, so I'd looked at Dwight McNeil a little bit going into this game week as you know, when I was looking at Mbeumo and others coming in, I was going to bring in an Mbeumo. I did look at Bowen and others. And one of the players I looked at, I didn't really ever really consider, but I did look at Dwight McNeil, and I looked at his points per start so far in the league, because I just thought whenever he does play, he's a bit of an injury record so far this season, but whenever he does play, I feel like he does quite well. He's keeping pace with the top FPL players. You know, he's got 5.4 points per start. To give you, put that in a bit of context, that's in the top 10. It's up there with James Maddison on the same. De Bruyne's on at 5.9. Saka's in at 6.1. Palmer at 6.1. So he's kind of keeping pace with some of the top FPL players this season at 5.4 points per start. So listen, I'm with you. This probably is a skip ? Game. But as the romantic... Goodison, last game versus Southampton in game week 37. I'm trying to build these narratives, and I can see from the look on your face you're not having it.
Well, do you know what? It is Southampton, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing.
It is Southampton.
It's hard to completely, you know, go against a player who is playing Southampton. And I think arguably, I mean, you could say Beto, couldn't you, for Everton? It's
here
Beto
we go.
Or,
now you're talking.
It's Come Beto or McNeil. If you've got a spare transfer, and this is what I mean, if you have got Jacob Murphy and you're going into that 37 game when they're away at Arsenal, is it, then you could say, let's take a fun punt on someone, and maybe McNeil is the one. But okay, do you know what? Of all of them today, that's probably the one that I'm most into, which is surprising because I did say to skip. But yeah, go on, McNeil in 37. Yeah. I'll give you that.
And it's not Arsenal, but it is Fulham away and Newcastle away, right? So it's difficult fixtures around it. So you will be purely punting for. I tell you what, game week 37. If you've still got your free hit left, getting a Jamie Vardy captain, getting a Dwight McNeil and a Beto win. This is what people want on this podcast, as they want romantic narrative backed by absolutely no stats whatsoever. Palace versus Forest. Let's go along with that. One win in five for Forest is a good point for them. No doubt a good point for them on the Monday night football, but only one win in five now. So they're sitting in sixth currently, a couple of points behind Newcastle and Chelsea for that last Champions League spot. Newcastle, Chelsea obviously play each other next week, whereas Forest, I think, is it to Leicester? Let me have a look. Yes, they go. Oh no, home to Leicester. Mm. So you've got to think that Forest are going to be favourites for that game. And, you know, either Newcastle or Chelsea are going to be losing points or dropping some points above them going into next weekend. So still all to play for. They're hanging in there, aren't they, Forrest? And they got what I would consider a fairly fortuitous goal. I think Nico Williams takes the shot. I think probably Dean Henderson, if it doesn't go wide, Dean Henderson probably deals with it quite well. But Murillo sticks a foot out, diverts it completely the opposite direction and gets what I consider to be a little bit of a jammy goal for Forrest. But they'll take it, the Forrest faithful. Investing in them with something to play for between now and the end of the season? How do you feel about them?
I think you're being a bit harsh to Murillo. If there's any other player, I'd agree with you. But with him, you never know. The intention's there to divert.
I think it's because I had Minors and I had the clean sheet wide. That's what it was. Yeah,
bitter about it. Yeah, that's fair enough. Funny team, Forrest, at the moment. I mean, I had a look at the team stats, looking at expected goals scored and expected goals conceded. They're in the bottom four for both over the last six games.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they're really struggling, you know, attacking wise and defensive wise. They're not picking up results. Champions League looked, you know, ropey and still does a little bit compared to where it was a few weeks ago. But like you said, this is a key game. You would expect them to beat Leicester. And if they beat Leicester, they are right back in it as well with Newcastle and Chelsea playing each other. So huge couple of games for them. I think they're a good team to invest in at the moment. I think they've got options all over the pitch. You know, if you're looking for goalkeeper, defenders, midfielders with Elanga, like we talked about, forward with Chris Wood to bring him back. You know, if you're buying into that narrative of something to play for, they are arguably the number one team, you know, where that's happened. And they've got the fixtures and they've had the pedigree this season. So, yeah, it's if you're looking at the stats, it's not great, but I've got a couple of Forest players that I'm really hoping they get back to it next week.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that I'd back them to beat Leicester at home, no doubt about it. And then, yeah, from a Palace perspective, yeah, we've spoken about Eze already, but he really was the star of the show. And I think that the penalty, I remember, you know, as I was watching the game, I thought, and I'm not an Eze owner, and I thought, oh, the Eze owner's got a bit jammy there with the penalty, but not really. I think us Eze non-owners have actually got away with one. One he whipped onto the crossbar on like the 80-something minute towards the end of the game. What an effort. I mean, he pulled the strings. You know, I'm showing absolutely no bias at all going into this cup final, but I would love Palace to win it. I mean, it'd be great for them to pick up a trophy and for him to really star in that, because I love him. I think he's a brilliant player, Eberechi Eze. And I definitely wouldn't sell him in FPL, I'd put it that way.
Well, I actually like the Palace team. Like, I actually like the players they've got and the manager. I don't like Palace because I'm Brighton fan, so I've obviously got that rivalry. Oh, so yeah. I don't want them to win it. That'd be horrible. But I do like a lot of their team. And I think, you know, with Elise leaving, there's a lot of question marks around them. And they had quite a difficult start to the season as well, but they've managed to turn it around. So, no, I'm happy for him. I mean, the only question with Eze was whether he would take the penalty, right? Because he missed the last one.
Yeah.
Obviously, Mateta then missed in the semi-final. So there were some question marks around who would take it, and it was another one of those little stuttering run-ups, which always make me a bit nervous if I owned the player. But yeah, scored, and he said he's not going to change that. So I think you're always going to have a bit of a nervy time when you see Eze taking a penalty if you've got it. But I mean, he was amazing. It's similar to Palmer, right? You know, the penalties maybe you could argue is fortuitous, but overall play deserved more. And Nketiah could have squared to him, but shot for goal. Mm. He hit the bar. He pulled all the strings. He looked great. Really good. And if you're looking at him versus Saar versus Mateta, if you've got all three maybe or a couple of those, Eze to me is the one that you keep. Because Saar, again, you know, just frustrating, right? I mean, he could have had another big haul, misses a one-on-one, XGI of 1.01, blank again, one assist in seven games.
That's tough, isn't it, for Saar? Owners, yeah.
And, you know, if he'd got the haul that he would have got in the semi-final in the Premier League, he would have got a 19-pointer.
So that's not going to make it any easier for Saar owners at FPL.
It doesn't make it any easier. So, yeah, I think Eze is the star of those three. He's the one you keep. But you probably keep Saar if you've got him, but I think Mateta's an easy sell.
Yeah.
And with Mateta being an easy sell, well, like you said, you only got 3 weeks left. So if you're going to make moves, you need to act pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The push for your mini league glory is on. I'm trying to push into top 100K. I need to make some, you know, real, you know, great moves over the next few weeks if I'm going to achieve that. You put the notes here. I'm reasonably confident. So you must be feeling like you can get in there, right? You're a bit ahead of me.
Well, I've tried to spin you so many romantic narratives. You know, if you're not going to get Dwight McNeil and Jamie Vardy in game week 37, as I can't help you. I can't help you.
But you're right. You're doing all you can. Doing all you can.
I'm trying my best here. I'm similar. I'm sort of flirting around 150K right now. I'd love to get into the top 100K. That'd be nice. I think anything less and I'll struggle to enjoy my summer, to be honest, particularly if Trent leaves and we don't sign another right back. You know, it'll be difficult. It'll be a difficult pill to swallow. Nevertheless, Kelly, Jules and Sam will all be back on Thursday this week with the Game Week 36 FPL pod. If you haven't already, it's never too late. Never too late, folks, to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is Q7YCO0.
Good one as always, Lee. I'll see you on the next one.
Cheers, Az. Good luck next week.